Hello, you are listening to an audio excerpt from the IPC Immigration Policy Panel discussion during the AILA Annual Conference on Immigration Law, which took place on June 27, 2013 in San Francisco. This podcast is brought to you by the Immigrant Legal Resource Center. In this audio clip, you will hear ILRC founder Bill Hing talk about the underlying assumptions of legal immigration, including implications of the business and family provisions proposed by immigration reform.
It seems like the focus today on visas, and Mary wanted me to talk a little bit about the background and history of the family immigration visas. I'm not sure if I'm being asked to give a eulogy to the sibling category. I'm hoping not. Okay. But I don't. Before I talk about the families versus labor visas, I do want to allude a little bit to some of the other provisions in the bill, and I know there are probably other fora that you're all talking about these issues here at the conference. I do want to give a shout out to the border groups, because the border groups are, as far as I can tell, they're the only groups that have really come out and said that they are now opposed to S-744. I read very carefully today other position papers by very, very progressive immigration groups, and they're very critical of many of these provisions, but no one else is actually saying vote against S-744. And so I want to applaud the border groups for doing that. I do want to express how disappointing it is that the bill has not addressed seriously issues related to due process, and under that falls, of course, the ever-expanding definition of aggravated felonies and the failure to reinstate waivers like 212C waivers, to not only address detention evils, but actually to expand the situation where detention can take place even more. Instead of 30,000 to 35,000 detainees in any given day, I predict that within a couple years of passage, there's going to be about 50,000 people that are housed by ICE on a daily basis. And Dianne Feinstein and others like her were let off the hook yesterday when the Supreme Court struck down DOMA, because they were failing in any courage to push for the inclusion of UAFA in 744. And while the decision yesterday is going to leave some questions open, because we all know, those of us who have practiced since before DOMA, know same-sex binational marriages were not recognized even before DOMA. It's interesting. We actually should give a shout-out to John Boehner and other Republicans for pushing this case before the Supreme Court, because it backfired on them. The language that the Supreme Court used yesterday is so expansive in terms of equal protection that I predict that if CIS interprets it correctly, that for people that are married in the 13 states that recognize same-sex marriage, it will be fine, and other foreign jurisdictions, that people should be able to reunify with their same-sex binational couple. One other word of warning is the fact that, and Mary alluded to this, what's happening in the House is all important. And, their gang, or as Nancy Pelosi calls it, their task force on immigration, where's their bill? And if they don't come up with a bill, the only thing they're going to have is the SAFE Act. And imagine that. If 744 passes in the form it is, and the House presents their bill to negotiate with, the SAFE Act, there's going to be a lot of room to the right on legislation. So let me get to the sibling and the adult over married siblings, the married adult sons and daughters over 30 that are being eliminated from the bill. And Guillermo did a great job of outlining some of the good things in the bill with respect to family. And besides immigration law, a lot of people probably don't know this, one of the other classes I've been teaching for the last dozen years is negotiation. And I gotta tell you that our negotiators who are representing us and our clients and our interests are crappy negotiators. And they've been put in, and beginning with the guy at the head, okay, with President Obama, and even acknowledge how the goalposts have moved on him year after year, and him showing good faith in terms of enforcement prowess and expecting something in return and not ever getting anything in return. And so that's sorely disappointing, especially when one focuses on an example like family immigration. The family immigration categories, particularly the sibling one, it didn't begin with 1965. The 1965 amendments were great insofar as eliminating some of the vestiges of the Chinese Exclusion Acts, for example. But prior to 1965, you could petition for your sibling if you were a U.S. citizen, not just your spouse and not just your children. So that category has been with us for a long, long time. I met Alan Simpson in 1979 when he was appointed to the Select Commission on Immigration and Refugee Policy by the Senate. And I worked for Cruz Reynoso and Rose Oche, who were public members of the Select Commission, as a staff advisory member on the Select Commission. And it was very clear early on that he had something against siblings. And it began his crusade. He began his crusade against family immigration in 1979 as a member of the Select Commission on Immigration Policy. And he attempted to get that provision eliminated in IRCA, but he was beaten down, in part because the Select Commission refused to go along with that type of proposal. So Simpson, Mazzoli, Simpson-Rodino, whatever you want to call it, that became IRCA, did not get a chance to delete those categories. But he didn't give up. Within 2 years, he proposed eliminating the sibling categories again. And this time he found a Democratic ally in Bruce Morrison, who was a quote-unquote liberal a member of Congress from New Haven. And you should know this, those of you who do business visas, Morrison eventually also proposed eliminating all the H-1B's visas as well. And so in what became the 1990 Act, and those of you who have been practicing since then realize that that's viewed as the expansion of the employment visas, but it's also the cap on the H-1Bs that comes into force. It's because of what Bruce Morrison was attacking. And again, we had to beat down their attack on family immigration at the time. They didn't give up, and they found a new ally in a think tank that was getting its feet on the ground in the 1990s, that has a tremendous amount of credibility today, the Migration Policy Institute. And one of my dear old friends, Doris Meissner, for some reason, she became enamored by this goal to eliminate the sibling category also. I mean, she wrote a paper as part of the Migration Policy Institute that there's an inherent tension between family immigration and employment immigration. And I don't get it. I don't understand why there needs to be an inherent tension between family immigration and employment immigration. I don't understand why we need to view this as a zero-sum game in terms of immigration numbers. Alan Cranston, who was a senator, as many of you know, from the state of California for many years, he had the best proposal that I ever saw when it comes to how to clear the backlog and maintain the current family-based immigration system. His proposal was to not treat Mexico like an enemy. His proposal was, Mexico ain't our enemy. Mexicans and Mexico are our allies. And so he proposed taking Mexican immigration visas out of the system and giving them a special large quota that would satisfy Mexican visas, people who wanted to apply, and treat them like the good neighbors that they are. Once you did that, once you took out Mexican immigrant visa aspirants out of the immigration, the current immigration system, you would clear all the black backlogs within 7 years. And that's all it would take. And there have been other proposals along those same lines. It wouldn't be the first time that the backlogs and visas have been proposed. In 1962, there was a proposal that passed to clear the backlogs for Southern Europeans. And that was done. And Peter Rodino, who was the dean of immigration policy back then and until the time that he passed away, he saw practical problems and he solved them in that manner. And incidentally, because MPI continued to push the proposal to eliminate the sibling category, at one point they even proposed to eliminate the entire third preference, not third preference, which was the married sons and daughters. That was one of the proposals as well. Because of that, I actually resigned, and this is the only time I'll say something personal today. I resigned from the Migration Policy Institute board in protest over those proposals. So the problem with attacking family immigration is that those of us who advocate on behalf of family immigration are put in a position of being labeled essentially soft on immigration. For some reason, if you are in favor of family immigration, you're viewed for some reason as soft on immigration, whatever the hell that means. And I think what the criticism is that you aren't supporting the immigrants that are going to help the economy, and that those that are going to help the economy are the STEM visa holders and the H-1Bs. And listen, I'm in favor of expanding STEMs. I'm in favor of unlimited H-1Bs. I don't have any problem with that, in part because I don't like the computer science professor at Davis who's the one attacking the
two personal things.
but honestly, the data, I buy the data that immigrants with high degrees and with ingenuity that they can help. One of my unwritten books was when I interviewed a bunch of Silicon Valley entrepreneurs 15 years ago about how immigrants were building the Silicon Valley. I know that. I know that's all true. And I know that they develop jobs. But you know what? The same thing is true about family immigrants. Family immigrants come here, their Social Security rate, their unemployment rate is vastly lower than the average American. In fact, you all know who do family immigration. They come here, they work. They have to satisfy that requirement. And in fact, if you look at the future job growth in the United States, it is, and there will be some, I guess, it is in the area of short or moderate term on-the-job training types of occupations. And that's what family immigrants do. And beyond that fact is the understanding that immigrants are consumers. And the way jobs are created in the United States is through consumption. When we buy things and we spend our money, we create demand, and that demand creates jobs. And so there was one great economist whose name is Simon, who wrote a book, passed away a few years ago, and he challenged naysayers. Show me any part of the country that has large immigrants, and I'll show you a country that's economically vibrant. And in fact, when the data was analyzed, over the last 100 years, every decade, the states with the largest numbers of immigrants had the lowest unemployment rates, and the states with the lowest number of immigrants had the highest unemployment rates. So it's clear that immigrants are healthy for our economy. But beyond that, the other thing that immigrants are is that they're good for our psychic value. They're good for our family. Just think of any of you who have families in the United States or out of the United States and what it means when they are here with you and how more productive that makes you feel and how more that makes you whole when you have your family members here not to be worried about. So the preamble to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights highlights that Unity of the family is the foundation of freedom, justice, peace in the world, and that's for good reason. And that's a reason that we all understand is really central to family values and the future of the country. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to an audio excerpt from the IPC Immigration Policy Panel discussion recorded during the AILA Annual Conference on Immigration Law. For more information, please visit the ILRC website at www.ilrc.org. The Immigrant Legal Resource Center, or ILRC, is a national nonprofit resource center that provides legal trainings, educational materials, and advocacy to advance immigrant rights. The mission of the ILRC is to work with and educate immigrants, community organizations, and the legal sector to continue to build a democratic society that values diversity and the rights of all people. This podcast was brought to you by the Immigrant Legal Resource Center.